Trying to explain to my wife what when I'll be home.
When will you be home, Bob?
I'm not exactly sure. Let's see, I've got to be on. I'll be in Madrid on the 5th. Santiago on the 6th.
Home on the 7th.
So I should be home on the 7th.
Yeah. So after you've gone Phoenix to Abu Dhabi to Beijing, across the Pacific, back to the United States, and then to Maine, you have to go all the way to Madrid, then to go down the... Dude, you're going to hit Did we go to Cairo? No. You're not going to go to Africa. Yeah. Everywhere else, though.
I don't know. All I do know is from this point onward, I probably won't have a shower until I get home.
I said I'm out here in Marana, 115 degrees, blazing hot. Getting the Boeing 777-300ER ready. Gonna head up to Phoenix, get some gas. Take it to Abu Dhabi, 16 hours en route.
Last August, Bob blasted off out of Marana with a virtually new 777-300ER that Philippine Airlines received right around the start of COVID. For reasons unknown to me, the airplane was returned to the lessor just a short time later and went into storage in the Arizona desert. After that, the lessor sold the jet to a foreign government operator to be put in service transporting VIPs around the globe. The GE90-powered behemoth was on our schedule for several months while it was returned to service, and Bob actually did a return-to-service flight check just a couple weeks earlier. We'd operate as a crew of four for the long trip to the other side of the world, so I opted to join up in Phoenix, sparing myself the drive and the extra leg. I flew in that morning, picked up our catering for the trip, and hitched an Uber over to the Jackson Jet Center, the FBO that handles us and provides fuel. I hung out on the couch for a bit, and then they drove me out to the remote stand to meet them on arrival. The flight from Marana to Phoenix only takes about 15 minutes, which was coincidentally about the same amount of time it took for me to get from the Jet Center over to the remote stand. Of all the planes I'm type rated on, the 777 is my all-time favorite to fly, and the 300ER variant is the best of the triples. An overpowered, comfortable, long-range airliner, the 777 also holds the distinction of being exceptionally forgiving and downright easy to operate. A perfect mix of old and new technologies packed into an ergonomic and spacious cockpit, the triple is, simply put, the greatest airliner ever built. We definitely don't fly as many 777s as we do other types, at least currently, so when one comes up, Bob and I both generally try to make ourselves available to fly it. In the case of this particular airplane, doing so meant leaving home on a multi-ship operation, which for me was only this plus an A320 out of China, but for Bob, he'd have to fly this and the A320 plus a 787 on the back end, making this an absolutely epic adventure for him.
Hey! How you doing?
Thank you.
Steve Giordano.
Hey, Ian. Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure.
Kansas City.
Gonna get you some Eagles gear, man.
Since Bob had already gotten a few recent landings in this triple, I would start and end the trip in the left seat. So as soon as I got on board, I started loading the box with our route while the fuelers pumped 134,000 kilos, approximately 43,350 gallons, of fuel into our tanks. It took six trucks, two at a time, and about 2 hours total to fuel this beast.
I can't believe we bought a database for $7,500 and the whole thing is not
even programmed. We bought a database twice for $7,500.
Yeah.
I think they used like an old route, and Mark changed the route.
For a change, we actually ordered nav data for this aircraft since the client opted to pay for it, but for some reason it was incomplete, and we still ended up having to build half a dozen user fixes. No biggie, that's what we do.
Right here.
16 hours is a long flight, even for me, but with four captains on board sharing the load, a comfortable crew rest compartment, and easily 100 pounds of food, this would be easy as pie by ferry pilot standards. The part I was dreading, however, was what came after we landed. Bob and I would need to make our way to Tianjin, China as soon as possible. There was an Airbus A320 there heading to part out in the United States, and there was a strong possibility that it would be ready to go in the next 24 hours. Originally, we had another crew slotted for that mission, but this had been a busy week full of changes, and the original crew ended up getting redirected to Guangzhou to move a newly converted A321 freighter over to Europe. The most stressful part of this flight would be being out of comms for 16 hours with numerous other trips happening in the background.
Highway, runway 26, Manic 120.
I'm waiting.
Let up and wait.
Said and done, I was in Phoenix about 4 hours before pulling out onto the runway for departure, with the bulk of that time consumed by fueling. It's actually somewhat unusual to fuel a 777 by truck.
Ready?
Most airports with heavy wide bodies flying long haul flights have hydrant delivery systems underground. Even without passengers or cargo, our takeoff weight was over 610,000 pounds. When combined with 1,000-foot elevation and the 115-degree Fahrenheit, 46-degree Celsius outside air temp, it took a whole lot of runway to get this big bird in the air, even with about 200,000 pounds of thrust from our GE90 engines. Definitely tell when you're flying a heavy aircraft. The huge wings easily absorb the summertime bumps climbing out of Phoenix, and you can just feel the mass of the thing behind you with every movement of the yoke. I made it a point to hand fly all the way up to the high 20s before engaging the autopilot, and then on the approach I disconnected the automation about 20 miles out. It took a good 25 to 30 minutes to get up to altitude, and once we were in cruise, I swapped out with one of the other guys for a while and went to the back to have a snack and poke around in the cabin.
He's just asking for it, isn't he?
I didn't want to wake Bob, so I decided to explore the cabin on my own, starting with the crew rest area up front. As a ferry pilot, I'm used to taking my break in a beat-up old passenger seat, an air mattress and a freighter, or even a makeshift camping hammock. That's if we even take in-route rest at all. A true crew rest area is quite the luxury for us, and the one in the triple doesn't disappoint.
It's a crew rest area, so we're like with a heavy crew of like four pilots. Two could sleep at once, technically, up here, separated by a wall. You got temperature controls over here. They get warmer, colder. There's your airflow. It's kind of turbulent right now. We have the other side. It's exactly the same. It's like a cave. And then you have the two seats. So on the 787, it's a little smaller than this. So it looks exactly the same in the 787 behind me, but in front, there's only one chair instead of two, and the chair faces the bunks, like basically recliners. It's bumpy as all hell. Oxygen, temperature controls here, first aid kit. It's really not too bad.
The entire compartment is located in the ceiling over much of the business class cabin, and few passengers even know that it exists. The 777 and 787 are the only planes that I know of that have this setup. The 747 has a bunk on the upper deck behind the cockpit door, and the A330 and 340 pilot rest areas are behind the cockpit on the main deck. The 757 and 767 just block off a premium seat with a curtain.
I'm sure people urinated there.
It was technically my time to sleep, but I wasn't tired at all. I decided to go wake up Bob and suggest he sleep up in the bunks, but he was already awake, fiddling with his phone as usual. I took a seat next to him, and then while chatting, he reminded me that there was a bigger crew rest area for the flight attendants located in the back of the cabin, and that we should go back there and check it out. With nothing better to do and still not even slightly tired, we headed back.
Not sure if we should be showing this to the world.
Okay.
Alright.
Oh, look at that.
Light on.
Yeah. Holy shit. This is huge. This is like one of those Japanese hotels.
There are definitely different configurations for the crew rest, which I assume airlines can specify when ordering new aircraft. I don't remember ever seeing one this big before.
They should sell tickets in these things.
I know. This is better than first class.
It's way better. Dude, I would totally pay for it. Could you imagine if there was like a TV?
I know.
I mean, this would be...
lay down.
This is better than Emirates First.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I really think that flight attendants shouldn't complain about their job so much. I'm going to get crucified for that.
Want pay raises too?
Still unable to sleep, Bob and I decided to head up front and offer up the first rest period to the other two guys. They both fly triples as their day job, so neither hesitated to take us up on our offer. Yeah. I swapped into the right seat and Bob took the left. The sun started to set as we crossed into Canada and turned to an easterly course heading for the coast for the crossing. As you can probably imagine, there isn't much to do on such a long flight, so we listen to audiobooks, music, watch movies, or play games on the iPad. The 777 is a smart airplane, and it does start to make noise and illuminate cautions when no buttons have been pressed and no motion is sensed for a while. That's to make sure the pilots are awake. This warning can easily be silenced by pressing pretty much any button. I usually spend a few minutes here and there paging through the system synoptic on the lower DU, which stands for display unit. Like an Airbus, the 777 provides graphics to easily observe what's happening with each system. The screen also displays normal and abnormal checklists electronically. Even though this newer airplane has all the bells and whistles to fly in any airspace worldwide, the SATCOM wasn't active for the ferry flight because the new owners hadn't yet configured it, so we were unable to be compliant with the CPDLC requirement for the oceanic crossing and had to descend to cross the Atlantic at 27,000. We'd climb back up once crossing Europe to save as much fuel as possible. Less than 3 hours after sunset, the sun rose again as we cruised over a solid cloud deck over the ocean. As I've said many times, this is when the tiredness really kicks in. I looked over at Bob and noticed him desperately struggling to stay awake. I felt the same. I heard rustling in the galley from Muhammad and Neil and was thankful that it was time to go get some sleep finally.
Well, we're about 9 hours in. About 7 hours to go, and it's my turn to take my crew rest here. So when I left the cockpit just a couple minutes ago, we were just coasting in off the North Atlantic track. We'll make landfall over
kind of the northwestern corner of France, and then head out over Geneva, and then over Milan, and then over the Adriatic in Greece, and then turn further south over Cairo, actually I think a little bit west of Cairo, and then we'll turn east across Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and into Abu Dhabi. So, oh, there's Bob. You caught me talking to myself.
I know, that's what I was like, are you on the phone or something?
I usually don't sleep too well in the bunks for some reason, but on this one I managed to conk out pretty fast. I got about 4 hours of shut-eye as we cruised across Europe under the afternoon sun, but for me in my little cave, it was pitch dark and very quiet. As you may imagine, with as often as we travel, especially when packing in multiple operations on a single deployment, waking up can be disorienting and it sometimes takes me a bit to remember where I am. Waking up dazed and confused in a crew rest area after some deep sleep is probably the strangest version of this. Once I figure out where I am and why I'm here, my mind then has to come to grips with questions like, how long have I been sleeping? Where are we now? And how much longer till we land? A quick glance at my watch sometimes helps piece it all together, but I often wake up not remembering what time I went into rest in the first place. When I got back to the cockpit, I got a brief as to where we were and what was happening. Turns out my internal clock had nailed it, and I resumed duty right as we were crossing into Saudi Arabia, exactly where I wanted to jump back in. This gave me a good 2 hours to reacclimate to reality and prepare for landing. I'm serious, every time in the triple. Don't get me wrong, I get my share of hard bouncers. For starters, I've got about 9,000 hours in the MD-80, so that alone comes with a heaping pile of shitty landings logged. I semi-regularly pound in the longer-bodied 737s. The 900, when light, often makes me thankful that I don't have to hide behind a locked door in front of paying passengers. I smash the wheels down sometimes in the odd 322, but the triple, man, that beefy landing gear and triple bogey wheel set absorbs so much energy. It'll make any idiot look like a pro. By the way, that rearmost tire pair does steer with a large nose wheel deflection for tight cornering on the taxiway. I'm telling you, the thing is the best airplane ever. I typically see only a handful of triples between my recurrent checks and the type, but I hope that changes. It should, now that they're converting them to freighters after they retire from passenger service. And speaking of retirement from passenger service, landing in Abu Dhabi wasn't even the midpoint of this trip for us. The final flight of a retiring A320 coming out of service in China was next up, and we had about 24 hours to get to Tianjin to make that happen.
It's so hot that I can't think.
It was about 8:30 p.m. by the time we got to the hotel in Abu Dhabi, and we were starving. We took a right turn on foot out of the hotel lobby and decided to eat at the first place we saw.
There's a bunch of idiots filming their food.
I can't see the food, man. What the hell?
Where did the sushi go?
There's smog everywhere.
The place felt like a dance club, and it was a little much considering how tired we all were, but the food was great, and we scarfed it down and headed back to get some sleep. Tomorrow would be a pretty long travel day.
I couldn't sleep. I got, right when I was like trying to force myself to sleep, the phone beeped, and then I was like, should I ignore it? Or no, I never ignore it. I always look at it.
Yeah, we had a possible mechanical on that 321. That's heading through Hawaii, of course. Where else do we have mechanicals?
Don't say Majuro.
We're going deaf.
I know.
The car ride from Abu Dhabi up to Dubai is a little over an hour and generally uneventful. Our flight was the nonstop to Beijing on an Emirates A380.
Those fuel tickets.
Well, that's not going to help. Just throw those in the trash. I don't want to see them. How many gallons have you taken, Phoenix?
About 650 gallons over what we estimated.
So I think we estimated about 30,000. Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was 39,000.
So we took 40,000 gallons?
Yeah, 40,000.
That'll be a $170,000 fuel bill.
Yeah, it's a massive bill. It's like, so expensive there. It was like $488.
Running nomadic when we're both at home means Bob and I spend a lot of time on the phone and on video conferences hashing out logistics on other trips and keeping the wheels turning with the commercial side of the business. When we're on the road together, that doesn't really change other than the dialogue is in person. We started reconciling the 777 trip on the taxi ride together and then finished invoicing it from the Emirates lounge. And yes, it was a $170,000 fuel bill in Phoenix. Carrying over 200K in costs for a trip in the early days was impossible. But now with the volume of aircraft we move, the company can support dozens of high-cost stops just like this while the funds cycle in and out like a revolving door.
Stand up straight, Bob. You look like an ape.
I am, man.
Speaking of apes.
Well, now I have to. I'm trying to like do a monkey puzzle on a Chinese app. Why? So I can get into the country. Like, you have to like figure out this monkey puzzle. Look at this. All right, I'm gonna.
You've been foiled by the monkey puzzle.
Oh, no. I've messed it up again. All right. Monkey. Oh, my God. That's. No, it's. Okay, now I'm on the butterfly puzzle. Cat puzzle.
Ah.
Oh no. Did I do it? Submit. Alright, let's see if we get it right this time. Ta-da! I've got the barcode.
Oh, and now so does everybody on YouTube.
You can all get into China now.
As Bob.
Yeah, have fun.
So the A320 in China that we were planning to fly out of Tianjin was actually originating in Yicheng, which only has a Chinese domestic airport. It's extremely challenging for foreigners to operate out of the domestic airports in China and also requires having a Mandarin-speaking navigator aboard. Rather than deal with all that, we hired a local Chinese crew with FAA licenses to make the short hop over to Tianjin, where Bob and I would take over. While in Dubai waiting for our flight, we were advised of some problems with the flight plan routing for that first domestic leg, and that would require a permit revision. This meant a 24-hour delay on the project, so the mad rush to get to Tianjin was now no longer a factor, and we could take our time. We boarded the A380 enthusiastically and hopeful that we'd sleep soundly the whole way over to Beijing. I usually sleep pretty well in Emirates Biz, but not on this one. I guess it was the timing of the departure, but it stayed bright and noisy for what felt like several hours. Bad sleep was beginning to become a trend on this trip, and the worst was yet to come. I eventually passed out from sheer exhaustion, but it wasn't for long and certainly not restful.
Man, that was some of the worst shit I've ever seen on a flight.
That was hell.
We should probably start moving faster. Bad things are gonna happen when we try to. Oh,
we put plastic bags down because the roof is leaking because it's raining. Oh. Not buckets, just plastic bags. Look.
Welcome to hell.
This is possibly one of the closest places you could get to hell. It's, I don't know, what is it? 90 degrees in here right now.
There's a lot of people.
The AC. It's been a long trip. I haven't slept in like 3 days. It's just been one thing after another. The guy sitting in front of us got up and down at least 30 times, opening up the overhead bin, click, 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 get his bag in and out, go through his bag, pull everything out, and then put everything back in, making noise the whole time. And then he sat down and started shaving with the electric shaver.
What was he shaving?
I don't really know. I was actually afraid to look. I mean, I heard a buzz, like a vibration type buzz.
I turned around. I thought maybe you were shaving him like a sheep. Oh God! Let's hope some of these people are getting off.
Look at all the condensation from everybody breathing inside there.
Oh my God!
There's nothing to hold on to.
Well,
luckily we're all packed full of people. You don't have to hold on to anything.
Oh my God!
Just lean up against the guy next to you.
It's the guy with the razor.
That's weird. Oh man, it's so hot and humid in here. Anybody breathing on us? Like, how is COVID not still going around here?
I'm sure it is.
It's bad, man.
This feels better than the airplane seat.
Yeah. Beijing is actually a fine city to visit. I know you were expecting me to completely crap on China based on its capital city's airport experience, which was and is, in fact, pretty terrible, but the city itself is quite interesting and well worth a visit. Look, you can't judge a city by its airport, and that's a good rule of thumb. I'm from Philly. Great city, horrendous airport. You know what airport is great? Detroit. But the city? You get the point. If I'm being honest, trips into and out of mainland China aren't my favorite. In my business, we regularly deal with the Chinese government agencies in long, disjointed permit processes, an experience that's about as much fun as it sounds. Also, doing simple things like paying for a hamburger are nearly impossible without uploading all of your information into WeChat.
Well, it's officially Tuesday, August 1st now. At 21 minutes past midnight. Then the plan is tomorrow, Bob and I are going to get down to Tianjin via train. That should be interesting. And then we have all day to get there. Nothing's happening tomorrow. The following day in Tianjin, we should be picking up that A320 and flying it to Guam and then Honolulu. Making our way back home, eastbound.
I was so tired that I don't even remember making that last video. I passed out instantly and actually slept for several hours, but woke up at the crack of dawn and decided that I needed to move my body a bit. The past few days were starting to take a physical toll.
So I just exercised. Bob's eating chocolate donut.
And a chocolate croissant. Bacon. Fried rice.
It's all right. I'm going to eat all that same shit, except I'm going to feel better about myself afterwards.
I'm going to work out later. As we run through a train station.
Yeah, we have to figure out that car. Man, this weather is terrible. Is this back into that typhoon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot that.
Thank you.
That was all happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, nasty.
So you ready for God knows what today?
No, not really.
Tracy says the train tickets aren't there yet. It's a high-speed train, and it's like a three-hour drive, but it's like a 40-minute train.
Oh, wow. So, what do you mean they're not there yet?
Well, we got the confirmation, but the actual tickets haven't been emailed to her yet.
Actually email you?
Like I said, it ain't going to be pretty, man. And they used your wrong passport.
What do you need a passport to get on a train? Oh my God, that's hot. That's some hot pepper. She was right.
Nice, I can't wait. I'm gonna go eat something.
I'm gonna end up with hiccups. You heading to the train station with Steve here. We are heading to Tianjin. We're in Beijing now. Our A320 trip begins.
Thank you.